In April of 97, I put forward some books for district approval about same-gender families, and they banned them.
I just dropped the phone, and I ran down the hall, and I said to Peter, we've won it, and we just both fell into each other's arms and cried. The Chief Justice of the court said, tolerance is always age-appropriate.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Indonesia's government targets Grindr in its anti-gay crackdown, Mexicans march for and against marriage equality, and how queer Canadian teachers taught public schools tolerance. Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 10th, 2016. Attacks on the human rights of sexual minorities by government officials and religious leaders in Indonesia intensified this week. The higher education minister started off the year by calling for a ban on LGBT support groups on state university campuses. The defense minister then said the growing LGBT rights movement in the country was worse than the threat of nuclear war. Just last month, a spokesman for President Joko Widodo told reporters that there was no room in Indonesia for the proliferation of the LGBT movement. Following the arrests of three men accused of using social media to run a gay prostitution ring that offered underage boys for sex, the head of the National Police's cybercrime unit announced this week that Grindr and 17 other gay social networking apps were found on the lead defendant's iPad and were being reviewed for a possible ban. An agency spokesperson told reporters that the Ministry of Communications plans to convene an interdepartmental meeting in the coming week to consider blocking Grindr and other gay-related apps. The gathering will reportedly include representatives of the Ministry of Religious Affairs, in addition to security and social welfare agencies.
Indonesia's Constitutional Court, the highest court in the world's fourth largest country by population, is currently considering a petition from fundamentalist Muslim leaders to make private consensual adult gay sex a crime, punishable by up to 15 years in prison, along with outlawing all sex outside of heterosexual marriage. The recent prostitution arrests have made headlines across the country, but have not yet been directly introduced into the High Court's ongoing review.
The fight for marriage equality is heating up in Mexico. President Enrique Peña Nieto has called on lawmakers to constitutionally open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. However, observers believe his proposal to be politically untenable at the moment. Nevertheless, it has mobilized anti-equality forces across the country who were expected to hold marches opposing civil marriage for same-gender couples in up to 100 cities on September 10th. Pro-equality activists planned counter-actions with marches of their own, including a September 11th march in Mexico City. The nation's complicated legal system has required state-by-state battles to enact marriage equality legislatively or by couples filing lawsuits called amparos. 10 states and the Federal District of Mexico City have thus far opened civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples, while efforts continue in the country's 21 other states. Meanwhile, LGBT activist groups are going after several Roman Catholic Church archdioceses in court, including those in Mexico City and Tijuana, in the form of what are called denuncias. They accuse church leaders of violating strict national laws that require the separation of church and state by actively encouraging their parishioners to join the anti-equality marches.
A citizen's petition has been circulating in Finland to overturn the legislature's enactment in 2014 of a bill making civil marriage gender neutral, although the law is not scheduled to take effect until March 1, 2017. The move to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples itself grew out of a citizen's petition in favor of such a change in the law. As of this newscast date, Parliament has not yet responded to the petition to repeal the law. In a related story, the Bishops' Conference of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Finland, the country's official national church, decided this week to prohibit pastors from blessing or officiating the weddings of same-gender couples when the law comes into force. They pointed to the Church Handbook, which defines marriage as between one man and one woman. However, the bishop said that pastors could still pray with and for all couples who have entered into a civil marriage. The church has even provided its pastors with guidelines for conducting such prayers for same-gender couples. Church members will include married same-sex couples after 1 March 2017, the official edict emphasized. The church is for everyone. Same-sex couples shall be treated as families, even though they have not entered into marriage in accordance with church law. Two pastors have already announced that they intend to defy the bishops by marrying gay and lesbian couples when the civil marriage equality law takes effect.
The Associated Press reported late this week that lawmakers on the Dutch Caribbean island of Aruba have created registered civil unions for gay and lesbian couples that will give them all the benefits of heterosexual marriage. They specifically include the right to a spouse's pension after death and the right to make emergency medical decisions on each other's behalf. Aruba is one of the constituent countries that make up the Kingdom of the Netherlands. Lesbian and gay couples have been able to legally marry in the Netherlands itself since 2001. Aruba couples have been able to marry in the Netherlands and have their marriage certificate recognized at home under a law obligating recognition of official documents throughout the kingdom.
In late-breaking U.S. news this week, a New Jersey appeals court has reversed the 2012 conviction of then-Rutgers University student Darun Ravi for invading the privacy of his closeted gay roommate, Tyler Clementi, by secretly recording Clementi's sexual liaisons with another man in their dorm room and posting the video online. An outed and humiliated Clementi jumped to his death a few days later from the nearby George Washington Bridge. Ravi was also convicted of bias intimidation, but the appellate court said that the jury's decision to convict him of that charge was predicated on a law that is now constitutionally defunct. After Ravi's 2012 conviction, the New Jersey Supreme Court, in a separate case, struck down part of the state's anti-bias crime statute that focused on the victim's state of mind, ruling that the defendant's state of mind was more important. His attorney, Steve Altman, told reporters that Darun Ravi, whatever he did or didn't do, had no homophobic motive involved. The court decided that Ravi could not have received fair treatment in the original trial because bias evidence permeated it. But it also ordered a new trial on several other counts of invasion of privacy and tampering with evidence, writing that the social environment that transformed a private act of sexual intimacy into a grotesque voyeuristic spectacle must be unequivocally condemned in the strongest possible way. The state has 20 days from the September 9th ruling to appeal to the New Jersey Supreme Court. Ravi has already served his sentence of 30 days at the Middlesex County Adult Correctional Center, released after 20 days for good behavior, along with 3 years on probation, community service, and a $10,000 fine.
Also in late-breaking news this week, the Associated Press reports that Chelsea Manning, the transgender U.S. Army private imprisoned at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, for leaking classified information to the WikiLeaks website, has gone on a hunger strike until she gets the adequate medical treatment she needs. Manning, then known as Bradley, was convicted in 2013 in a military trial of leaking more than 70,000, often embarrassing or worse, secret Army and State Department documents. She's been denied important transition-related care in the military brig since her incarceration. In the statement supplied to the AP by her ACLU attorneys, Manning said that starting September 9th, she would not voluntarily consume anything except water and prescription medication until she receives the minimum standards of dignity, respect, and humanity, and that she is prepared for the possibility of dying. According to the wire service, Army spokesman Wayne Hall said he was looking into the situation.
And finally, the author of the popular memoir, Eat, Pray, Love, which spawned a movie starring Julia Roberts, has added a new lesbian chapter to her story. Elizabeth Gilbert announced in July that she and her husband had separated. Her fans have been speculating ever since as to why. She wrote on her Facebook page this week about getting the news a few months ago that her best friend, fellow writer Raya Elias, had been diagnosed with incurable pancreatic and liver cancer. The 47-year-old Gilbert said that when faced with the idea that Elias could die, she realized, "I'm in love with Raya." She confirmed that the epiphany led to the breakup of her marriage, but asked for privacy about further details. "For reasons of my own integrity and sanity," she wrote, "I need to be able to walk into any room in the world with Raya on my arm, feeling relaxed enough to stand comfortably in simple openness about who we actually are to each other." Even though she acknowledges that Elias's terminal illness will abbreviate their time together, she concluded that truth is the force that guides us to where we need to be in life, but love is the power that heals us once we arrive there.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 10th, 2016, produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
My husband and I were funding this case, and our house was standing as collateral in the event that we would have to pay for this case. And at that time, we had a legal bill of over $300,000.
Personal jeopardy makes political history for two recent generations later in the program. Some may say that sports and politics should never mix, but that's not always the case. Lesbian U.S. soccer star Megan Rapinoe has taken a stand, or make that a kneel, in support of footballing San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick's Black Lives Matter protest. Controversy has been roiling the sports world since Kaepernick announced that he would not stand during the traditional pregame playing of the Star Spangled Banner because of the racial injustice and oppression that still plague the country. Saying that it's important for white people to speak out, Rapinoe told the press, "Being a gay American, I know what it means to look at the flag and not have it protect all of your liberties. It was something small that I could do and something that I plan to keep doing in the future and hopefully spark some meaningful conversation around it." It's not the first time something queer has happened around a song of U.S. patriotism, as this Rainbow Minute recalls.
America the Beautiful, widely considered the other national anthem, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The lyrics were written by poet Catherine Lee Bates, a Wellesley College professor who lived for 25 years with her beloved Catherine Coman, a fellow professor there. Bates' poem was inspired by an 1893 trip to the top of Pikes Peak, where she marveled at the majestic view. Years later, Bates cared for Coman after breast cancer surgery. Upon Coman's death at 57, Bates expressed her grief by writing a collection of poems for the woman she had nicknamed Joy of Life. Titled Yellow Clovers, A Book of Remembrance, it took its name from the little flowers each had pressed into the letters they wrote to each other when apart. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Brenda Thornton.
Still to come, we'll travel to Canada the Beautiful. But first... Waking, sleeping, or reading, This Way Out Queer Life and Literature commentator Janet Mason hears the disturbing echoes of history repeating itself.
When I heard about queer identities and politics in Germany, A History, 1880-1945, by Clayton J. Wisnant, Harrington Park Press, 2016, I was immediately interested. It's not an easy book to read. The first night I started reading it, I kept dreaming that the United States was sliding toward fascism. Then when I woke up, I thought about the presidential election. I guess it's safe to say that the book got under my skin and that it was published at exactly the right time. The Weimar Republic and the openly gay culture in Berlin was embedded in my LGBT encoded memory. Wisnant writes about the, quote, homosexual movement launched in Germany in the 1890s that led up to the openness of the Weimar Republic in the 1920s. There were between 90 and 100 gay bars in Berlin, frequented by gay men and lesbians. There are also many thriving publications for gay men and lesbians. The lesbian publications were the ones that addressed the trans community. As open as it was, the Weimar Republic was far from being a utopia for LGBTQ people. There were anti-gay laws on the books, but German police officers, for the most part, turned a blind eye to the bars. The author writes about Christopher Isherwood, a prominent foreigner who frequented the sexual underworld of Berlin. Isherwood wrote a series of short stories, The Berlin Stories, which inspired the Broadway musical and the award-winning film Cabaret. The book also chronicles the downfall of the Weimar Republic. This includes the rise of censorship laws that targeted gay and lesbian publications. The book also addresses infighting and factions in the, quote, homosexual movement, including the masculinist faction, that abhorred anything feminine or feminist. Ultimately, many of the masculinist gay men joined the Nazi Party and were put into concentration camps and exterminated. Things changed almost overnight, as the author writes. In 1930, the Nazi Party won a staggering victory in the federal elections. Overnight, it grew from a small fringe party with only 12 seats in the Reichstag to become the second most powerful political party in the land. Homosexual activists recognized they were in trouble. The book also chronicles the persecution of gay men and lesbians in the camps and concludes with gay and lesbian life after 1945. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Queer Identities on Politics in Germany is a history book that the Vancouver, British Columbia, Surrey School Board would certainly have frowned upon back in the day. That lesson after this important message.
Attention all LGBT, U.S. history buffs, collectors, and listener supporters.
You can now own a very special edition of This Way Out.
Here's a taste.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Children born today will grow up in a world without DOMA.
This is social engineering by a court.
Yes, it is, Mr. President.
Congratulations.
Today, some of the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history.
It's the day I finally get to look at the man that I love and finally say, will you please marry me?
From outlaws to in-laws traces the legal evolution of the U.S. Supreme Court.
From the decriminalization of private consensual adult gay sex in 2003 to making marriage equality the law of the land in 2015.
This special edition features the voices of dozens of equality advocates over those years who made the journey possible.
Despite always outspoken opposition along the way.
From outlaws to in-laws also includes a wide variety of thematic music.
You'll find all the info you need about this very special edition of This Way Out at
thiswayout.org.
Well, isn't that special?
I moved here in 1990 when I was 17. In 1993, I started a radio show called Queer FM on CITR. I had no idea at the time, but I was about to document one of the most phenomenal decades in the struggle for queer equality, 1995 to 2005. It was the decade we went from no constitutional human rights to full legal marriage.
Vancouver, British Columbia radio journalist Heather Kitching got herself a front row seat for the most pivotal 10 years in Canada's LGBT history, And she's bringing the era back to life in an award-winning CITR documentary called Queer Decade. In part five, Heather looks at a tragedy that became a victory.
In March of 2000, a young student in Surrey named Hamed Nasto filled his backpack with rocks and jumped off the Patullo Bridge. He left a suicide note that said he can no longer take the harassment he was getting at school. He said kids called him gay and faggot, even though he was neither of those things. His story helped raise people's awareness about the problem of homophobic bullying.
My name is James Chamberlain, and I teach at George Vanier Elementary in Surrey.
From a forum on queer education in the year 2000.
In April of 97, I put forward some books for district approval about same-gender families. The way our school district works is it's very tightly controlled in terms of what you can and can't read in the classroom under what's called personal planning, or sort of the sex ed or family life portion of the curriculum at the elementary level. But the school trustees decided that these were not suitable for kindergarten or any other grade level, and so they banned them.
My name is Murray Corrin. I was a primary teacher with the Coquitlam School Board. I've been, for a good number of years, making presentations around issues to do with queer education and queers in the education, public education system. I and James Chamberlain were involved in an informal association called the Gay and Lesbian Educators of British Columbia, the acronym being GALBC. And we used our connections with our local teachers' associations to bring forward a resolution to the British Columbia Teachers Federation to establish a program that would bring about the elimination of homophobia and heterosexism in the BC public school system. While this was going on, James had submitted the request for the books to be approved, and when the board finally came down with the decision not to allow the books to be used, we were approached by our lawyer by the name of Joe Arvey. And Joe said, you know, are you going to allow the Surrey School Board to get away with this? The case then began in the Supreme Court of British Columbia and was heard by Justice Mary Saunders. And she came down on our side, and therefore the Surrey School Board was required to pay our costs. The school board decided to appeal the decision, and in that particular instance, the court came down with what we considered a very muddy decision. They said, you know, both sides were right and both sides were wrong, and we were required then to return the costs which we had won at the lower level. My husband and I were funding this case, and our house was standing as collateral in the event that we would have to pay for this case. And at that time, we had a legal bill of over $300,000. We tried to convince primarily the kindergarten teacher to allow the case to go forward, and he was very reluctant to do so. And so therefore we had to indemnify him and all of the other petitioners on the case, so that should we have lost at the Supreme Court of Canada, my husband and I would have been entirely responsible for all costs related to the case. You know, it was difficult to imagine that we might lose our house because of this. There was no guarantee that we were going to win. We had received, I think on Sunday night in December of 2002, notification that the court was coming down with its decision the next morning. I sat there at 7 o'clock in the morning, clicking refresh, 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 and nothing was happening, and nothing was happening, and I'm getting really tense and worried, and suddenly my phone rings. And it's a journalist from the CBC, and she says, well, what do you think? And I said, think about what? She said, about the decision. And I said, you know, with great trepidation, I said, what was the decision? She said, you won. And I just dropped the phone and I ran down the hall and I said to Peter, we've won it. And we just both fell into each other's arms and cried with such relief and joy. Looking back on it today, I think it was a seminal move on the part of the courts to validate our realities as queer people, and particularly children in the public education system. One of the statements that the Chief Justice of the court, Beverly McLaughlin, made in her finding, she said, tolerance is always age appropriate.
In part six of her documentary, Heather Kitchen puts the icing on the wedding cake.
Yes, 158,
nays
contre
133. I, Tom.
I, Tom.
Take you, Anthony.
Take you, Anthony.
To be my life partner, my spouse.
To be my life partner, my spouse.
To love and to cherish.
To love and to cherish.
As long as we both shall live.
As long as we both shall live.
Don't miss the heartfelt conclusion of Canada's Queer Decade, next time on This Way Out.
Queer Decade 1995 to 2005 was written and produced by me, Heather Kitching. Madeline Taylor engineered the interviews. Queer Decade uses music composed by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Details are at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. The compositions are called Shades of Spring, Walking Along, Spellbound, Acid Jazz, Chipperdoodle Volume 2, EDM Detection Mode, Ether Disco, Pyro Flow, Danger Storm, Lightness Dawn, Babylon, Son of a Rocket, String Disco, Your Call, and Basement Floor. Queer Decade is a production of CITR Radio and the UBC Centennial Initiatives Fund.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Tanya Kane Perry, Brenda Thornton, produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns, Janet Mason, and Heather Kitching contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This way, I thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this show possible. Check out the latest program information and a lot more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
Gordon's alive.
We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WDFH Austin in New York, KMUDNE Redway Garberville and Arcata Eureka, California, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.